You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, Redcasters, be sure to subscribe to our channel and ring the bell to be notified about our latest videos. Go Big Red.
Welcome to the Go Big Redcast, the Husker Fan Sports Show.
Welcome to the Go Big Redcast. I'm your host, David Gaspers, and I'm with Redcast Rob.
Well, after a break for a couple of weeks here and just getting out and taking my family to Disneyland, I've perfected the use of my camera and able to observe everything from a distance with it. And I'm now here to share all of my podcasting secrets from other podcasts around Disneyland with the rest of the Redcast.
Is that a Connor Stallions reference? I'm not.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Dave. Never heard of her.
Did you buy an intern extra tickets for Disneyland? And
well, my four-year-old daughter, if that counts.
Sure, absolutely. She's a Redcast intern. I
also bought a custom lightsaber. I'd be happy to show it to you.
I've heard about these custom lightsabers.
They're pretty cool. I've got it right here if you want to see it.
That's between you and Rachel. Don't get us involved with that.
Hey, now.
I'm also with Boomer.
Well, Rob, if you start selling vacuum cleaners, we'll really know what's up, I guess. But I'd also like to give a shout out to any of our Michigan State listeners. Yeah, you may have won at football, but we haven't lost in basketball yet this season. So take that.
You know, Boomer, I was going to get into the vacuum cleaner services, but I hear it really sucks.
Okay, Rob.
All right. Thanks for tuning in, Redcasters.
That's the show. Wow. We'll eventually start talking about Nebraska ball. It looks like Fred's got his team on a hot start. Another victory appears to be in store here tonight. Who are they playing, Boomer? The Rattlers of Florida A&M, is that right?
Florida A&M Rattlers.
Excellent.
Yeah, the Rattlers.
That's right.
Vaunted series back and forth.
So
66-40 last time I checked.
We'll get that. And in some past years, we were ready to talk about basketball because we didn't want to talk about football any longer. But that's not the case. We did take a loss last Saturday in East Lansing. You listened to the show last week. We talked about how you shouldn't mess around with the Spartans and leave them in that game. They've been playing a lot of their opponents very close and finding ways to lose. And well, they eventually found a way to win. Now, I mean, there's some that might not like some of the refs' calls, including Matt Rhule, but at the end of the day, it was a 2017 loss. And we got to bounce back, and we got a home game against Maryland. So we'll start breaking down the Terps here in a little bit when we get into scoring explosion and throwing the bones. But let's put on our scarlet-colored glasses and talk a little bit about last week's game and what we liked and what we didn't like. Rob, the West is a complete mess. It's 5-4. Wisconsin lost. Iowa could easily lose the records this week. We're not out of this thing. And we also aren't bowl eligible, and that still needs to happen, right? So what are your thoughts from last week's loss?
It was frustrating because I felt like it was a game that we should have gone in there and done what we were supposed to do. We should have won that game by at least a couple of scores. It just is super frustrating to see some of the same mistakes on the offensive side of the ball made over and over again. I also feel like there was a couple of decisions in the option game and in the pass game that were very questionable. Obviously some things, as far as like pass interference not being called, You know, a touchdown on their end on the defensive side that it should not have been a touchdown. I mean, those are things that you can't go back and, you know, you can't take them away, because had we completed some of those plays and again, not turned the ball over three times, we probably would have won that game by at least a field goal, if anything. Right. So,
yeah, I mean, it was a toss up game, right?
We didn't get
the calls that, you know, you need to go or avoid the turnovers. You know, Boomer, we had two chances in the fourth quarter there to either tie or take the lead and just couldn't get it done. And I mean, you wish you would have gotten another 15 yards and let your special teams and Alvano see if you can get that thing into overtime, right?
Yeah, that game was just kind of a microcosm, again, of just how Nebraska's been playing all year. I mean, defense played. It wasn't the greatest defensive game they played, but it was okay. I mean, it could be enough to win, you know, what the defense put out. But again, the problems we've been harping about all season, constant turnovers in the offense. You know, you can't turn the ball over three times every week and expect to win every one of them. And then the offensive output was kind of how we've described it all season. We had about one really good drive that we got a touchdown in, and then everything else was just either a broken play that, you know, Harburg managed to scramble for, you know, I don't know if it was broken, but it was a nice run it was just a big chunk play that set up the touchdown. Yep. And then the one drive, which basically just helped along by continuous Michigan State penalties. They were just never really the great consistent drives by Nebraska. It seems like they're good for about one good, solid looking drive every game. Then everything else is just hope the defense keeps you in it and you break those couple of plays, which gets you the victory. And that was kind of the recipe in some of our earlier wins this season. And just didn't work this time. The defense just, you know, had a few plays get away from them. Michigan State had a few chunk plays where they got some yardage and points, and you know, it just didn't work in our favor. So that's just,
I mean,
see how it goes.
That recipe for success is in Vegas. Jairs watching tonight says -12 in the turnovers. Can you bring that back up?
Oh, of course.
This year is last in the nation. That sums up all four losses. I mean, it sums up our victories too, Jared. I mean, like, it's just been a consistent thing, and that's really hard to do. And when you pair that with an offense that's not explosive, and you're going to play low scoring games that are going to trend towards being close because they're low scoring, the margin of error is really thin, right? And some programs like Iowa have been doing this for two decades, and they've got it figured out well enough that they can win a lot of those. And I don't know if I necessarily want to be just like Iowa, but at least for this year, that's how we're going to continue to win. And if we could clean up some turnovers, the offense would, you know, have more chances to get a few of those chunk plays and get a few more points on the board. It is a something that they'll have to figure out over the next 3 weeks. All winnable games. The bowl still out there. The West is still out there. I don't know. Rob?
I mean, obviously, again, you know the kind of fan I am. I think we're going to win every single one.
Tell me about the Kool-Aid, Rob.
I think that it seems like a loss like this. The last time we lost, we won three in a row. So
yeah, there you go.
We just lost. Now we're going to win three in a row.
Yeah.
And I could put it into so many words, but I'm going to just leave it at that. I mean, Rhule, you could tell Rhule was pissed off. And while he sounded like he was in the press conference, he sounded like he was pissed off at the refs and all these other things. I guarantee you that those kids were hearing it in the locker room and on the practice field. He's a motivator. He really is. I mean, guess what? We're 5-4. We've won more than we've lost this year. Let's be absolutely positive about that. Can we win one more out of the next three? Absolutely. Should we or can we win the next three games? Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's – I mean, to your point of Rhule being a master motivator, I mean, it was a little bit different of a press conference than he's had. It does feel like he's always speaking to his team through those press conferences. We're hearing the same thing that he's already saying to them. I think he was trying to kind of reiterate the point that he thinks they're a good team and that loss wasn't all on them, right? He wants to keep them feeling like they've got a lot of confidence.
They are a good team, man. This is fun this year. This is really fun to watch.
And, you know? And it is funny, the fan base, Boomer, is just, it's extraordinary sometimes. I mean, like, I've been listening to some of the local radio shows, and, you know, you hear callers saying, like, they're not going to make a bowl. That's going to be a disgrace and all this stuff. And 1 week ago, it was like, we're going to win the West. And now we're back to, we can't make a bowl. I mean, can the fan base be more bipolar? I don't know.
No, it's pretty much like a Dr. Pepper Fansville commercial. You know, guys, this is the first play. I mean, you know, and that's just the nature of fans, especially nowadays. It's just, you know, it's always either you're at the conference championships in sight, or it's the worst thing ever. Fire everybody, as, you know, message board geniuses likes to say. And I think when we talk about Rhule and what he says in the press conferences, you know, certainly this loss isn't on the players, not even on the refs. I think some of it's on the coaches too. I don't think they schemed particularly well for that game, either on defense. They didn't seem quite as aggressive as they normally do. And special teams, God almighty, the punt and punt return teams on that were just, I don't know. I had questions about that the whole game. I know we had text chains going about that and some tweets we threw out there. I still don't understand the mentality of, you know, just putting a guy back there to fair catch it, knowing he can't run with it, or you don't want him to run with it, and then catching it on the five. That's just killing you field position wise. And we saw it over and over and over again in that game. And you couple that with not a great day from your punter, and if you don't, you're just setting your offense in such a hole. It just, I couldn't understand that idea. You got to take a few risks back there, especially with all the talk we heard at the beginning of special teams, you know, this season, how it was going to be such a major focus. And, you know, they're not going to be fair catching it or let it go into the end zone. And just to have to do that in a game, I still don't completely understand that end of it. So hopefully they'll do something different this week. So.
I would like to say, though, and give a shout out to Ethan Nation, because he caught every one of them that he needed to catch. He didn't fumble. Yep. There was one, though, man, and I keep seeing it. And I'm only saying one because there was probably a couple, but there was one. He had like 20 yards of grass between him and the nearest defender when he got that ball. And I was thinking to myself, like, God, if he had just run forward like 5 yards, we would have had the best starting field position of the day. You know what I mean? Like, and I really don't understand it. Like, does he not trust like a Malachi or, you know, Doss, you know, Jaden Doss, like to get back there and catch it, because those kids, they're we know they're fast. We've seen them. You know what I mean?
Like, I mean, the answer is on the field, I think, right? Yeah, the answer is yes, right? You know?
Yeah, so, right. And so, I want to know what they're seeing in practice to where that's their strategy. Because, you know, hey, I can sit on my couch and you know, say what I want to say about it all day long, right? But I mean,
and we do.
And we do, but I mean,
Boomer, just theoretically, it is kind of unusual that this is not just a Nebraska thing. This has been football for decades, I guess, I suppose. I mean, it's not uncommon that you have a cornerback or a safety, a defensive secondary player catching punts. Yet they typically, we always joke that, oh, you're on when they can't make an INT because they drop the ball. It's like, well, that's why you're on the defensive side of the ball, right? The guys with good hands are the wide receivers. But why would you not always have your wide receivers catching the punts, all right?
That's a good question. Maybe I guess the punt's coming down at a slightly different angle than your typical quarterback pass. Unless we're throwing the pass, then it kind of does come down like a punt. But, we'll get to that
later. Yourself.
Too. Yeah. I think it's just another opportunity to get a speedy guy back there that isn't a wide receiver. You know, maybe you just don't want to run the risk of getting a receiver hurt or something like that.
That makes up quite a bit.
Especially this year, I could certainly see that being the case. But that was just the biggest disappointment that I had. And here's another good stat from Vegas Chair here. So from Sepple in 2001, we had 850 yards on punt returns, and this year we have 24, and that's.
Sounds
about right. I mean, that's just so much field position you're giving up.
DeJuan Gross and God, who else was there in the early 2000s? I mean, we had Keo Craver. I mean, those guys were just returning punts all the time. Now, I mean, punting has evolved. I will give them that, right? I mean, like, punters have gotten better. Different angles, able to position the punt, all that type of stuff. But that's an extraordinary stat. Defensively, I wanted to touch on really quick. Boomer, you mentioned this. I do think, and Tony White acknowledged it, it did seem to be a little more conservative last week and didn't put a lot of pressure on Michigan State, which I think is a mistake. It felt like that was a chance there. You could have created a turnover or two and maybe got a defensive score that would have switched the momentum of that game. So we'll see how that evolves over the next 3 weeks. Right. I mean, I think that might be the best offense right now is a defensive score.
Yeah. It's, or at least just getting the ball or something on
short field, et cetera.
So you don't have to go as far. Yeah. I think that's the biggest thing is just, you can't give up that big a field position and hope to make it up with this offense. And if it is a defensive score or just any turnover, and you know, that's kind of been unfortunate. We haven't generated a whole lot of turnovers on defense this year either. So that makes that turnover margin, you know, extra painful at that point, you know, when you can't even kind of making it up on the defensive side of things. So I think they'll have to do that. You know, we'll probably touch on this more when we hit Maryland, but they're definitely going to have to put more pressure on than we saw against Michigan State for sure.
It feels like Michigan State really played like they had nothing to lose, right? They had losers six in a row.
They really don't at this point.
They just was like, you know, or let's go. I mean, I feel like I wish Nebraska could get back to that. It felt like a few games ago they were just like, well, let's just play loose. And I think this bowl game looming out there maybe impacted how they played against Michigan State. We'll see how well they can come out against the Terps. But the sooner they can get back to playing loose and confident, the quicker they're going to get to that sixth win and maybe even more.
You know, Dave, and to your point, you said something, and I was trying not to laugh like literally out loud when you said it, because this is the point we are with this defense, right? You were saying, it didn't seem like we were pressuring the quarterback that much and getting to him and running some of those plays and being aggressive. We had three sacks in the game, right? I mean, there was like periods like last year and a couple of years ago where we'd be happy to have three sacks in five games. You know what I mean? Like, now three sacks in a game is just not quite up to our standard anymore. Right. And I like it though. I like it, but it makes me smile. And you're absolutely right in your point, but at the same time, it's just ironic, I guess. I don't, is that the right term for that? You know? So,
All right, guys. Let's head on into our scoring explosion, which is what we'd love to finally see in one of these games. I mean, I would take anything in the 20s practically as a scoring explosion. I can't believe we scored 31 versus Purdue, right? I mean, that was amazing.
We did. And, we did have special team score there, though. So,
Now, all right, so Nebraska versus Maryland and really these next three games with Wisconsin and Iowa, you know, Boomer, how do you think we're going to try to move the ball here? There's a chance that Billy Kemp is back potentially this week. That could be a weapon that could maybe change the dynamic a little bit.
Yeah, it would definitely help, and I think if they can get just some more – just consistency and momentum in the running game. And some of that I think is self-inflicted. It just seems like they rotate running backs more frequently than I, you know, me sitting on the couch is, you know, Rob liked to say than I think we normally should. You know, I thought Emma Johnson showed a lot of good, you know, had a lot of good rushes in that game. And then it would seem he'd be out or, you know, didn't get the start in various time, you know, possessions. And it just never seemed like we allowed any one of the running backs to really get any kind of momentum going in that game. And it was constantly rotating him in and out, and, you know, that makes it tough. And then when they'd fall behind, you know, the chains, then you have to throw in the next couple downs. And, you know, that's a big problem. And I think, you know, maybe against Maryland, you need to be a little more patient with that running game. Let one running back have a couple series at it and see if he can get something going. I think that'd be your best bet, you know, as far as offensive, you know, offense against, you know, the Terps go. Because they're not the greatest rushing defense in the country. So they're okay. But
what's their numbers, Boomer?
They're 26th. I mean, they're pretty good. I mean, they don't compare to Nebraska's rushing. They're allowing about 115 yards a game, roughly. So
115. Okay.
Yeah. I see him as 28th, but we're whatever. It's either apples way, and oranges. Yeah, yeah. And
one's metric.
You know, I mean, their passing defense, which is even worse. The is like 75th or something like that in the country.
Right.
And you know, and funny.
Don't
enough,
ask about our passing offense, though.
Well, our statistically. The matchup doesn't play in our favor then, right? I mean, we'd rather have a team that's a struggle.
It does because they can't rush the ball. And we only give up 77 yards, and they've only averaged like 31 or something the last few games.
But that's the next segment. Sorry.
My bad.
I mean, you save that stat, though. But, I mean, like, I mean, that could balance out. And, I mean, I'm exaggerating there a little bit. But, I mean, like, the reality is that, I mean, Maryland – and we're going to see this with the other teams. I mean, more and more here is this: if Harvard doesn't show that he can throw the ball a little bit better, they're going to continue to stuff the box. Now, if Honky was on the show, he'd tell you, oh, we just got to run around them and do other stuff. And I agree with him. We do need to have a diverse running game to fix that too. So it needs to be a combination. But
and one thing though too, and I'm curious, and I'd like maybe, and I can't believe I'm about to say this, so please excuse me if I throw up afterwards, but I don't understand why we haven't gotten more of the short passing game going, right? Like with some of the screen passes or even like sure. just short, just, you know, little patterns over the top to the tight end. I know that have done some of those, mm-hmm. but a lot of them seem like they're more kind of like, you know, post routes, like over the middle or something, right? Like where not something like a classic, you know, 3 yard tight end pass over the middle, like classic Jay Novacek or like, you know, Travis Kelce or something like that, where it's like a yardage and then let your tight end do the rest of the work. I don't see a lot of those. Think
that some of that might stem from, you know, Harburg's throwing motion kind of being sidearm and they're worried about those getting knotted down, batted down at the line, because they do come off kind of weird angles.
A lot of those require for the defensive guy to be charging the quarterback, then him to throw over to like the defensive player who had released that defensive guy, right?
And then we've seen him hit a few of those out routes. The one touchdown for Fedoni a couple of games ago, several plays on that drive where they seem to be giving the out to us and we were able to take it. But I don't know. It's a really good question, Boomer. I mean, you know, the coaching staff has said they've kind of adjusted this offense to fit Harburg's strengths, but sometimes I question that, right? You know, I mean, I was watching him again this week, and I mean, the stats tell you that we're a running team, but outside of a few busted plays, we really don't consistently run the ball that effectively, right? But when Harburg does break one, he has absolute straight line breakaway speed, right? I mean, and defenders pick bad angles and he runs right by him. But he doesn't have a lot of lateral quickness, you know, and he has gotten better with pitching the ball. But when he's running down the line, and Rob, I think you had some tweets about this, you know, he tends to be a little tentative, and he's better off when he is just one step and go, you know, and turn up field and let those jets kick in.
Yeah, and, you know, Rule kind of commented, and I'm not quite sure if he was thinking on the same thing that I'm thinking, but he said that they want to see him just run through the faces of the defenders, right? Which is kind of what I said, is I don't understand why Harburg is like, he's got 6-7 inches on some of these, like, defenders, right? These safeties 5, and whatnot. 10
cornerback.
And,
sure.
He's probably, yeah, and he's 6'5"?
He's 6'5".
Like 210. He's 2'10". And, you know, and he's built like a Sherman tank, you know, I mean, he's going over, and it almost feels like there's some hesitancy from him. Like almost like he's afraid that he's going to get hurt. Cause he knows if he gets hurt, who knows what we've got waiting behind him.
At this point,
But at this point, I mean, come on, man, go John Elway helicopter to the end zone, man. Like that. I mean, and as a Raider fan, me saying that hurts, but I still want to see it. I want to see some John Elway helicopter to the end zone against Green Bay, it needs to happen.
It's an interesting
thought. We also need a fullback on 4th-and-1.
Sure.
Shout out to Rob Zapka.
But, you know, I think I'd like to see Harburg when he's picking up that speed and ready to head north-south, being able to lower his shoulder. He's 6'5", so he does need to get down a little bit more. Because if he's going to be – what was the phrase that Rule wants him to, you know, be hitting guys?
Run through someone's face.
To do that, he needs to get down to their face. He's right. He's a little tall, right?
So, yeah.
I mean, I think I'd love to see Harburg – learn how to do a stiff arm or to lower a shoulder and see if a guy bounces off, right? You don't see that too much.
Reminds me of when he runs a lot? And again, I'm not making 100% comparison, but right. It's almost like a Darren McFadden, like, you know, one of the biggest things.
Oh, that God, a Raider reference. Good.
Well, great. Actually, I was thinking more like when he was on the Cowboys, but okay.
Okay.
But like, he was a high and tight, but very upright runner. Right. And Harburg has that same quality to him.
Long strides.
Yeah. Like you don't want to get in front of him. Like if he's running at you, you're thinking twice about whether or not you want to tackle him or just maybe try to trip him, you know? Yeah. And it kind of has that same feel to it when he's running. Cause even that, I mean, God, when he is running and he's carrying that ball and he's got it up here, just like two hands on the ball running right there. That is like some sexy stuff going on. I mean, that's how, that's how you want to see all of our running backs carrying the ball. When he's going sideways, he looks very like, I keep thinking he's going to get the ball knocked out, or he just looks confused. A lot of times he'll drop down, look like
fluid out there.
Yeah. He'll like drop very down like he's Derek Carr in the pocket or something. And somebody like gets near him. So
I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole, because a quarterback conversation really is at this point best suited for off-season talk, right? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, regardless of what happens, I think Harburg is back next year. Yeah. And I also think that they'll likely bring in additional quarterbacks for more competition, right? I don't know who actually ultimately starts. It's interesting. I mean, Harburg, by all accounts, didn't get any coaching last year at all, right? I mean, like literally Whipple didn't even want him in the QB room. So he probably hasn't been properly developed. I have seen him make some progress, I think, on some of his technique. I see maybe a few less of the sidearm throws now than it was beginning of the year. But I would love to see an off season with him with a lot of time to actually work, whether it's with Nebraska's coaching staff or even doing some of those QB camps. And you know, I mean, at this point, if I was, you know, Henrik Harburg and his family, and you have a chance to maybe maintain your starting role at Nebraska, go get yourself a QB coach for a couple of weeks or something. I don't know, but work on your footwork. He's got a great arm, right, guys? I mean, he's got a cannon. He can throw the ball.
He does. It's just that throwing motion is
and nuts. Because of the throwing motion, yeah. He's inaccurate, right? I mean, it's he has crazy slot angles and whatnot. He's not consistent, and thus sometimes when Fedoni's wide open over the middle, he throws it 5 yards off and it's a pick, right? I mean,
and
sometimes he's just not seeing the open guys too. I mean, that was a problem.
On those throws too, you know, and somebody pointed it out today. I can't remember if it's Huskers X and O's on Twitter or somebody. Sorry if I'm not giving credit to the right account, but they were posting pictures of it. Like when Harburg is throwing from a certain position or, you know, motion in the pocket, his throws are right on. But as soon as he like either has to like take a step up or he's like just a little bit off balance, he's flying the ball, like you said, 5-6 feet over guys' heads, which have been resulting in interceptions. Yeah. You know,
it's typically thrown off your back foot, you know.
Yeah, like throwing it. So he's just kind of off balance, and it's like and sometimes he's doing it when there's nobody near him, which is the thing that concerned me the most, I think, on some of those. Like, mm-hmm. you'd see it and he'd be standing there and still, you know, airmail it. Does he have the potential? Absolutely. Could he possibly be using it? Like, do we have any? I know they'll probably go out and they'll probably get a transfer, right? I mean,
yeah,
there's a couple that we speculated on in our chat, you know, whatever. I don't want to get into that right now because, you know, I don't want to be accused of tampering. But you know, and then we've even got our the top 11, you know, freshman coming in.
Danny Kalen. Yeah.
Danny Kalen. And you never know. He'll probably be there in spring, you know, or hopefully he'll be there in the spring.
Yeah. And good chance.
And you know, that'll give him an entire offseason to work with the team and everything. And as we know, Rule is not afraid to start freshmen. Now, again, that just kind of goes to where, like, how does he feel like this team progress wise? And, you know, if starting a freshman quarterback is going to set the team back or not. But there will be options.
I think there will be
a competition.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, whoever it is, they want to try to fix the quarterback position to the greatest degree possible, because I think the team, if the defense kind of continues to gel, could be really good next year, and you want to be able to have an offense that can complement that, especially that back half of that season.
That is Eddie plus to next season. At least it starts fairly slow. You've got kind of a longer runway.
Yeah, you want to stack wins early, though.
I'm sure we'll get somebody out of the portal this year. I'm guessing, you know, out of our three quasi starters this year, two of them aren't going to be here next year, and we'll speculate on that later at the end of the season.
Yeah, it feels that way.
I think you're going to have to get at least one or not two guys out of the portal just for depth purposes alone. If not,
it's a thin QB. When you get three scholarships, you should have at least four.
Yeah, I would think four to feel good about it. And yeah, sometimes you have five. I mean,
We've had that in not recent years. Another thing, I mean, like, this is obviously the offense is going to evolve a little bit. If you're going to stick with Harburg, I would explore at least having some more increased RPO element to an offense, because again, if he's a really good straight line runner, I can just in my mind picture him. I could totally see why the previous coaching staff, recruited the guy, because he's got great straight line speed, and with an RPO where a quarterback takes the ball and just heads north south at an angle, that's his game, and he's not running east west as much, and you could pull that down in a play action essentially and throw the ball over the middle, which he has the arm to do. So I totally get why they liked Heinrich, and maybe they could have more plays that are better suited for his skill set if he's our starting quarterback going forward.
And also next year, you'd hope to have Gabe Irvin back healthy, and
I don't know, from your and you got to fix
so the offensive line. Running back depth to certainly help too, I think. So much pressure on just the few players we do have, and I think that's setting everyone back a little bit too. So.
Yeah. But I want to talk about the next three games because, that's what we got. I should say the next five games because we've got three league games left. We've got the championship game. We've got our bowl game,
right?
Which could be a, New Year's Eve.
Well, if they're going to win the championship game, right? So yeah, I like it. I like that thinking.
If we get there, guys, if we get there, it's
when because we get there.
Our defense, right? Let's talk throwing the bones and all things defense. And Rob, what do you think the defense is going to have to do stat line here to beat Maryland? What do we need to keep the Terps offense to point wise?
Set the edge, blitz, force,
Talia Tagovailoa.
Keep, we'll just call him the quarterback, basically on his heels. He's obviously going to run when he can, but at the same time, I think it's going to take pressuring him. I think because we're going to do a lot of man coverage probably on wide receivers, maybe some Tampa 2 kind of stuff. But I mean, really, we're probably rushing.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
5-6 guys throughout the day, like just doing crazy blitzes, things like that, in that 3-3-5 defense. That's what I think they're going to probably have to do, because you're going to have to keep him on his feet because their rush game is terrible. So, I mean,
Maryland doesn't run the ball effectively at all.
No.
And Talia can be prone to INTs. He's got probably the best skill set of any quarterback we've played outside of JJ McCarthy and maybe Hudson Card.
Yeah, and I said that I did say, I think I said it on Twitter today. Someone said, what's your score prediction for this game? And I said 27-20 Huskers. I said, but the defense is gonna have to at least score one of those touchdowns.
Yeah, and I think that could be the case. So I think you have to get pressure on him. I think he's prone to INTs when you do get pressure on him. So I do expect them to be more aggressive in going after him, because now, I mean, when you say that, right, Boomer, you say, oh, they're already one-dimensional. That's when they're going to figure out some way to pop a big run on us, right? So I think the defense will still need to be on its screws to make sure that they keep them one-dimensional.
Yeah, and the big thing on that is, pressure, like we said earlier. I mean, like last week, Maryland did not play well against Penn State. They looked pretty well overmatched.
Penn State has their number.
They got sacked like six times, I think. They ended up like negative 49 rushing yards or thereabouts. So,
yeah,
I don't think we're quite up to Penn State's snuff, as an overall team, because they scored 51 points in that game, held Maryland to 15. But I think, that's, again, with our offense, that's what you have to do. You have to try to keep a team into that that teens area. You know, Maryland looked okay for a while against Ohio State, but still ultimately only managed 17 points in that. Yeah, they did lose to Illinois and Northwestern.
Yeah.
They had 20-some points.
Talk about Jekyll and Hyde. Right?
Almost 30, yeah. I think, in both those games. So, you know, they do give up some points. But, you know, when they're on pace, like they played Michigan State earlier this year and kind of crushed them. I think it was 31-9. So there is a, you know, they can be a capable team. They just hit a rough stretch like Maryland always seems to do, you know, the second half of the season. And, yeah, I think that's just what the defense has to do. They have to get pressure on him. You know, they can't let him run, try to keep them one-dimensional, and just try to generate those sacks just because that sets a team so back against us. And then, you know, just get those, you know, three and outs or only one first down a series and get the ball back to the offense so they can have that shot to break that play. So I think they just have to stick with the formula and just get that to work, you know, again this week. Yeah. Being at home, and this is a high-pressure game, you know, for Maryland because they still got to get that one more win to get a bowl.
Yeah, and they have what? You know, they have Michigan after this?
Michigan after us, and then they end at Rutgers, which is not a joke this year. So this, I guess on paper, you might say, is their best chance to get a bowl, to be bowl eligible.
Yeah, it's tough because they're on the road at Nebraska and then on the road at Rutgers, right?
Yeah, Rutgers. So, they'll be underdogs in both those, I imagine. And, you know, when you think you started 5-0 and you're in mid-November risking not making a bowl, there's a lot of pressure on them, I think, in this game. So.
Yeah,
they might be trying to force a few things, and the defense hopefully can take advantage of that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's what we're going to look forward to. Vegas Jerry shows we need at least 5 sacks in the game. I would take that. Yeah,
Big Macs absolutely. For everybody.
Yep. That's right. That's right. That's right. All right, Rob. Well, any other keys to the game that you're looking forward to? This
we need to return the ball on special teams.
There we go. Let's talk about that for a little bit. That was
frustrating,
hey, Boomer.
Yeah.
You know, what was the stat you guys threw out at me earlier?
821 yards returned in 1 year, I think, in 2001, 850, there you go. And we had 24 this year.
Holy cow. That's extraordinary.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that's probably my biggest disappointment with how the season's gone, especially, you know, we had the talk at the beginning of the season, the offseason, about how good or the focus was going to be on special teams, and we weren't going to be just fair catching everything, really go to the end zone, we're going to be returning the stuff. And injuries play a role, I get it, but you just can't seed that. So
overall, outside of that, special teams looks fine. Like, it's not something that's like the fact that we have to talk about it is what bothers me, but every other aspect of special teams is not bothering me. Kickoffs are fine. Kickoff returns or whatever.
Punts are a little inconsistent, but not.
Punts are a little bit, but they haven't cost us a game.
Field goal kicking has gotten better, Alvano.
Yeah, they haven't cost us a game. There was a couple kicks where I think there was like some pressure that got on our punter and he shanked it for like 34 yards, which is great because in the past we used to shank it for like 15. So, I mean, you know, there's an improvement, right? But I mean, over in our kicking game, you know, our field goals and our field goals and our extra points, he hasn't missed an extra point all year. That's me knocking on wood. Sorry. Sorry, Tristan. I hope I did not jinx
you. He's not going to miss.
But
he doesn't listen to the show.
We know who to blame.
Do you know that for a fact, Dave? Do you know that for a fact?
I hope he doesn't.
Last week's show had 850 downloads. Do you know who every single one of them was?
We've had way more than that. That's a false stat. We know that. It's in the thousands. We've always in the thousands.
Yeah.
Crush that number. It's like 30,000 or some stupid thing her dad says. Wow. all right. Let's. Anything else on the Huskers? You want to start talking about some other best bets of the week out here?
The Betcast picks of the week.
All right, guys. This is a slate. I mean, it is loaded with games. Let's start with a marquee game out of our own Big Ten conference and take Michigan going to Happy Valley. I hear it's like a pseudo whiteout, like it's a stripe out or something. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, they go white and blue, like based off of like the sections or something like that.
There we go. Wolverines favored by 4.5, over under at 45. I think I got this game already at Michigan 4. I so there's my cards. I think Michigan is going to be well motivated, and I think they're the better team. I think Penn State is only this close of a spread because they're home. Boomer, what do you think?
Yeah, I was a little surprised the spread was, or the spread was this low, you know, especially as good as Michigan looked and as bad as Penn State played against Ohio State. So, I mean, they were just kind of blown out of that game. I think maybe some of it's just maybe people don't have a lot of faith in Michigan. It is from their schedule that they played. I mean, they haven't played a Murderer's Row yet, so maybe people are being a little apprehensive on that and how any sort of, you know, I don't know if people have heard, but there's been some shenanigans and goings on with Michigan, you know, in the last few weeks. And I can't even put into words all the twists and turns of that. That'll take its own show. It'll be a whole season of 30 for 30 on ESPN at some point. I mean, it's outstanding. Every day it's something new. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't even keep up. But I still expect Michigan to win this game. I don't think Penn State's got an offense that's going to score appreciably enough to win the game against a defense like Michigan. Even if they have the signs or don't, Michigan's defense is pretty solid. And I don't think Penn State has the weapons to win this. So I'd probably go with Michigan State here, you know, to cover. I think they would cover 4.5.
Both defense are pretty similar, but I would think the Michigan's offense, at least on paper, looks a lot better than Penn State. Rob, you got a quick take?
You know, I was going to be a contrarian here and do it, but I've watched Penn State a couple times, and their quarterback is just not that good.
He could be good in the he's very young, and he's only started.
He might be good down the line, but I mean, he throws with the accuracy of our quarterback sometimes. So you know, I have to go. I would say Michigan 4.5 is, as Vegas Jer says, is the suitcase bet this week.
All right.
Which means to me, put all your money on Penn State because I've seen Vegas Jer.
So I would say that if you want to follow, you want to trail Vegas Jer, get it now because that number is probably going to move.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, Vegas Jer said it was a max bet with Michigan versus, was it Rutgers? I can't remember who they were playing. And he got it early in the week at minus 28. By the time we did the show, it was already minus 31. I think it went up even higher from that. They won by 28. So Vegas Jer probably got his money back. You know, he pushed. But anybody who took it at over 28 would have lost that one. But
it's a lot tighter
spread there, Vegas Jer. I agree with you on this one. I've already got my bet in. I think Michigan will cover.
Full disclosure, Dave, on our weekly picks with Skip, I did take Penn State to cover the 4.5. You know, because my gut tells me it's going to be a game that comes down to a field goal because Michigan doesn't have all of Penn State's signs this week.
All right. I have no idea. It was last week. All right. Sorry, Vegas Jer. Yeah, it was frustrating. I might have trailed you and lost on that one. I got to admit,
Indiana last week too. I'll give him that. So
yes, he did.
And Brandon Page, you know, with the Penn State, you know, quasi wet out, the blue, white, you know, every section. And it'd be kind of fun to see if Nebraska fans could pull that off. I mean, I've heard us try to clap in sync, you know, in the stadium. We can't manage that. I'd love to see us try to alternate patterns there just for fun. Maybe one season we should try that, just see what happens. You
know? I'd love to see if we could pull it off. I agree. We seem very uncoordinated, though. All right, let's move on. Rapid fire here, maybe a little bit. Texas Tech going to Kansas. At Kansas, Bean has been playing really good as their second string quarterback, and obviously they got some big victories now. Over under at 62.5. I'm thinking Kansas can cover this. Boomer, what do you think?
Yeah, give me Kansas. I've watched the Jayhawks these last couple of weeks. They're a good looking team. Wouldn't really want to play them.
Nope.
So unless Leipold's distracted by Michigan State talk, nope. Give me the Jayhawks.
Yep.
He squashed that today. I'm
yeah. He said he's lifelong Kansas. He's not going to leave. I don't know.
Jayhawk. Yep. Well, and you know what? I'm going to jump on the Lance Leipold bandwagon here. And I think Kansas is rolling. They're having a really good season this year. And I think they cover the 3.5 at home.
Yep. Leipold's doing a great job. All right. Let's head down where it matters more. SEC land. Bama at Kentucky. Only 11. Just bumped up to 11. It was 10.5 for most of the week. Over under at 47. Rob, I used to always have a first half bet for Alabama. I might go back to this, but This feels kind of short. I feel like Alabama is gonna run Kentucky. You know, kind of like how Georgia did.
I am not gonna play around with a Bama team that has a point to prove. I will say that a Nick Saban team with a point to prove. They have not looked world beaters this year.
LSU last week,
but after all the talk, they just every week they're just on the outside. There are still prognosticators that are saying, you know, Bama has a chance to sneak into the playoff and all this other stuff. And I feel like this is a game where they're going to go into Kentucky and, you know, maybe prove that point, which means hedge that bet, people, because Kentucky will probably pull this one off. So,
Boomer, what do you think?
Yeah, give me Bama. The world's so dark. They're going to sneak themselves into the playoffs some way, shape, or form. And really, when's the last time Kentucky's pulled off a major upset, or let alone anyone in the SEC for that matter? So, yeah, go Bama. They'll win this. So probably by 13, 14. So
there we go. That's a win. All right. I like a lot of the Big 12 games this week. Baylor, which is just awful this year. I don't know if Dave Aranda's.
Thanks, Matt Rhule.
Well, I mean, honestly, Rob, if you think about it, it really speaks to how well Dave Aranda had this team going with Rhule's players. And now that he doesn't, where are they at?
Can you imagine? There was actually a whole contingent of people that wanted that guy to be our coach.
Yeah, absolutely.
For shame, people. For shame.
Yeah, I'm sure he was vetted. But I think Rhule would have got hired over him anyway. Going to Manhattan, K-State favored. I did find a 20.5 when I made these a few hours ago. It might be up at 21 already now, over under at 55. I like the Wildcats here, even though it is a big number.
Yeah, that's a lot of points. I mean, K-State coming off that near win against Texas, you know, I don't know. K-State can put up a lot of points. It's just, do you think they can keep Baylor from scoring at all? So
they've covered their last four games at home straight up, and have only given up like 3 points. They're beating bad teams, and I don't think
they are. Yeah, it was like TCU and Houston, and they play Texas Tech, won by 17-ish. So I guess Baylor might be is worse than Texas Tech. So if you want to use that as a measuring stick, yeah. That's just a lot of points. I don't like it, you know, 20, especially if you end up getting into 21.
Under the key number 21, though.
Yeah, it is. Right. I was going to say, it's just under that.
Yeah. So if you're listening to the show right now and get it for 20.5, maybe. But if you're listening later and it's 21, that might be a little questionable. But, yeah.
All right. Rob, how about this one? Okie State. they found a quarterback and a running back, and they just keep on winning. They took down Oklahoma and Bedlam, only 2.5 point favorites on the road in Orlando.
You know what? I really like what the Oklahoma State fan base has been doing on Twitter these days. And so I okay, State Probs. We follow each other on there, and he's a great follow if you're not following him. And we had a good time during the logo contest back in over the summer in the off season. I like Okie State at 2.5 over UCF, even, you know, they're playing down in Florida. And I just think, this classic Big 12 matchup here, you know, it's really going to really, gonna, right. I mean, they Okie State, you know what? I don't know. I like them. I don't know. UCF just hasn't done anything to impress me this year. Obviously,
an All-American running back, a seventh-year quarterback with Alan Bowman. I mean, he's been everywhere. Yeah. Boomer. I mean, it feels like almost a stinky number. I'm a little surprised.
A little suspicious of that. I mean, what you've got Oklahoma State, who's looking at possibly playing for the Big 12 title, kind of thing, and. Central Florida.
Let down. Like, maybe it's a spot
win, if I remember right. And that was against Cincinnati.
They played some tough.
A lot of these new Big 12 teams are kind of struggling. I'm surprised that number's that low. So unless there's something we don't know about.
The over-under, though, is really interesting, too, because it's like, what, almost 70 points, you know what I mean? 65.5. It's like, that's a really big number, too.
So. Yeah, give me the Cowboys in this one. They'll cover 2.5.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, speaking of over-unders, this is the opposite of that. Here it is. Rutgers at Iowa. Favored by a point. Over-under is 28. I've actually saw it at Caesars at 27. I don't know how much lower it can go, guys. This is a record, a modern day record for an over under. And I would probably take the under because I just, you know, how can you take the over at this point? I don't know.
I've never been so happy for an 11 a.m. start for Nebraska because this game is now going to be a 2:30 game, right? Like after the Nebraska game. And it's always a good time. You know, I'm always wanting to take a nap around then. So I'll just throw this game on, go lay down on the bed, close my eyes. Score will be 0-0. I'll wake up and it'll be 2-0.
Maybe. You know, Boomer, there's a lot of fun ways you can bet this game, right? Obviously, 28's a key number. Iowa's only favored by a point. I feel like might be the best bet just to take Iowa because Iowa just tends to win these games. Do you really think Rutgers is going to go into Iowa City and get a W? I don't know. The team totals, both of them are 13.5. So if you think the loser is not going to get two touchdowns, just take the under on whoever that is, right?
Yep.
The first half over under is probably 13.5. You could bet. I saw Iowa second half team total at 6.5. You know, that I think that might be your best bet. Iowa tends to win these games by scoring 7 to 10 points in the second half, right? They'll be 0-0 at half, and then Iowa somehow figures out to score at least one offensive touchdown at some point. Take the Iowa team total in the second half. Take the under. I don't know.
Either team get a hit or just both pitchers going to just be dialing it in.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, we're talking about football. My bad.
I mean, I plan to watch this game. I'm going to set my TV to black and white and turn on some old-timey music and mute the sound.
That was a great tweet. Who did that last year, Boomer?
Yep.
No, that was this year.
I saw it on Sicko's committee, but I don't know if they originated it, but it was a great tweet. They had the game-winning field goal with Iowa Northwestern set to the nice grainy black and white stuff and some
I saw the whole highlights. They had everything.
Ragtimey jazz. Yeah, that was awesome. But this game is just glorious for the Big Ten right here. Over under 28 and Iowa minus one. Man,
it's become an entire storyline on its own. Oh, yeah. I mean, to your point, the games are ugly, but everybody's now just paying it really acute attention because it's like, is this possible? Can they continue to hit on
somehow? It is. Yes, and you know, Rutgers someday is going to get a big win in a game like this. They're always close to pulling off a win every year. They just haven't done it. I'd almost want to pick them, but I just don't think they'll pull it off.
Let's go Rutgers. Yeah. Let's go Rutgers. Yeah. I'm taking Rutgers.
To win. I just
I'm taking Rutgers
will.
To win it.
I was going to pull off something annoying and win, you know. And Vegas Jerry is already hoping that Nebraska-Iowa is going to be 26.5.
He's right.
Going to be really
amazing. It's going to be lower.
I'm looking forward to that, too. That'll be the cherry on top of this Big Ten West, you know, final year. It'll be that
as Nebraska, we take the Iowa championship final. By scoring 27 points on our own.
Absolutely. That game might end 3-2, Rob. So
if Nebraska Iowa is that low at 26.5, that's where you really get the team totals because one of them will have to be down to like 11 or something like that. It's going to be insane. I don't know.
Chubba Purdy comes in and throws for 350 yards and rushes for 110 and saves the entire season, you know, in the Wisconsin game or something, you know.
I would say, back to this game, Rob.
My bad.
Winsett, the Rutgers quarterback, is definitely INT prone. I could totally see a pick six. I don't know if you could find a team prop bet on does Iowa get a pick six or not, but I would probably take a flyer on that.
I have noticed, and maybe I'm crazy, but DraftKings they don't do like prop bets on college games or anything.
Colorado does not have individual player prop bets at all. It's not allowed in Colorado. Other states do, but you can do things like offensive touchdowns. I think defensive touchdowns, etc. So it cannot be individual prop bets though.
Yeah, I think Nebraska just allows betting on games prior to 1967. So we're not quite there.
They have longest touchdown. You know, which team has the longest touchdown? They have total touchdowns over under 4.5.
Let's go on to Tennessee at Missouri. Mizzou having a great season. Tennessee, though, favored on the road in Columbia, 1.5 points, over under at 57. This is ranked versus ranked. What do you think, Boomer? Boomer, you're muted, I think.
Sorry. Yep. This is battle for second place in the SEC East there. You know, like I said, Missouri's having a good season, and, you know, they played some teams fairly tough. Boy, you know. Oh, gosh. Why don't you give me Missouri just because they're at home? I don't feel great about it, but yeah, I'm definitely going to watch the game because it'll be interesting.
I am a little surprised that they're a home underdog. Rob, what do you think of it?
I mean, God, I mean, they have the spread, right? You know, it's basically a pick 'em, right? I mean, other than, you know, Mizzou at home versus Tennessee, a chance to.
I mean, Tennessee is coming off that challenging game against UConn.
Well, they're both 7-2. One's ranked 13, one's ranked 14. I mean, I don't know. This is a perfect chance for Mizzou to shit the bed. So I'm going to go ahead and take Tennessee on it.
All right.
I mean, you want to pick for me, that would be my pick. There you go.
More ranked versus ranked. There's just so many good games here. I had to, like, hit them all. Utah trying to bounce back. Going up to Seattle, Washington is favored by 8.5. I've seen this slip up to 9.5, I think, already. Over under at 50. I kind of like the Huskies here. Utah seems to be licking their wounds, and they're not as good on the road. Rob, what do you think?
Well, you know what? The Heisman run for Penix is on, and I think this is a game where he's going to come out and show the world why he thinks he deserves it. You know, I mean, it's
he really needs cool. A stat stuffing game,
and he does. And you know, well, it's going to be hard to get that against the Utah defense, I will say that. But at the same time, you know, they are going to be at home, and you know, there was talk about Heisman for him, but like this week, it's kind of really heated up for some reason. So, I mean, you know, this is a prove it game for him. I think he's going to come out, you know, I think the Huskies win by 2 touchdowns.
Okay. All right. Boomer.
Yeah, Washington, I think, is looking for that statement kind of game here as the season closes. You know, the narrative lately has been that they've kind of struggled in these games they played, you know, since Oregon. Mm-hmm. You know, they haven't looked super sharp in all of them. They've won them all, so got to give them credit for that. So I think, you know, they're going to need a game like this where they just come out and kind of beat an opponent fairly handily from start to finish. And Utah's a good team. I don't know if Utah will have the offense to keep up with Washington in the long run in this game, so... Yeah, why don't you give me the Huskies? I think they can cover 8.5. This is probably a 14-point win for them.
So. Yeah, I think Washington, just from a like perception standpoint, is going to want to come out and look good. Oregon throttled Utah, right, in Salt Lake City. So I think, you know, right now it's a perception scenario in Washington, even though they're the one with the zero in their record. Right now is being perceived by many as not as good as Oregon, a team that they beat. And ultimately, it's probably going to come down to the Pac-12 championship game between those two. But it's kind of a pole position thing here. So I kind of like the Huskies to try to show what they're made of. All right. Boy, in past years, this is a biggest game of the year. It's still an important one in Miami. Now bowl eligible at 6-3. Going to Tallahassee, Florida State favored by 2 touchdowns. Over under 51.5. Florida State doesn't really need style points at this point. They just need to win the ACC. What do you think, guys?
This is a game Florida State. I think they just take it away. You know, they're not messing around this year.
They're the better team.
They look really good this year. I always laugh because, like, even you know, our buddy over at Pick Six Previews, you know,
Brett Ciancia,
had Florida State and he said that, and I was laughing. And I think even on that show, I made a little bit of fun, like, okay, is this going to be like your, you know, this team? Because I think he picked like Miami or Florida State a couple of years ago.
North Carolina, a couple of years.
North Carolina, that was the one. And sorry, Brett. So I was giving him a hard time, but man, he nailed this one. They just look good. They look solid. Like from
you can go back and listen to that show. I fully supported Brett on picking Florida State. I did question his picking of Wisconsin to win the Big Ten West, and that's where I feel like I got him this year. So, Boomer, what do you think about this one? Seminoles by a mile.
I think so. I mean, even when Florida State doesn't play very well, I mean, they didn't blow the doors off Pitt, but they still won 24-7 this last week. They've just kind of smoked everybody else in the ACC. Mm-hmm. Outside of that Boston College game, you know, it seems like an eternity ago if you're Florida State at this point.
That's the truth.
Yeah, they don't have a whole lot to finish the season. It's Miami. Then I think they took a page from the ACC and they have a directional Alabama school. next week and then close with Florida. And then you got your ACC title game. So, you know, they can't afford to stumble here. So I think Florida State's going
to win. This is their last ACC game is what you're saying, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So they've got to come out, just, you know, clobber Miami, just win convincingly, you know, end that and then go into the ACC title game and, you know, get slip into the playoffs. So, yeah, they I don't think they'll slip up here. And nothing Miami showed me this year says they're going to do it. So. Yeah, give me the Seminoles.
You know, they won't even if they are ahead, they'll probably just fumble the ball at the end of the game. And
well, they'll just kneel on it. Yeah, they won't kneel on it. Yeah. So.
All right. Back to the SEC. Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin going into Athens in between the hedges. I got favored by 11, over under at 58. Seems like I think Georgia could take care of this. I've been looking at the numbers. I also got Georgia first half. Red is at 6.5 under a touchdown. That might be a safer bet. Lane Kiffin's notorious for biting, clawing at the end of games and tends to be a backdoor cover type of coach. Rob, what do you think here?
Bulldogs? I don't know, man. This is the time of year. The Bulldogs still aren't the number one team in the you know college football playoff rankings. This is just, again, them, Florida State. This is the time of year they're just going to put the pedal to the metal, you know, floor it through the end of the season.
All right, you're taking Georgia.
Oh, gosh, yeah. And I think by right. I think 11 is generous for this game.
All right. Here Rob says easy cover here by the Bulldogs. Boomer?
Yeah, I agree. It's, again, the world is so dark, and Georgia's going to, you know, get themselves undefeated to the SEC title game. And you know, the SEC, you know, unlike the Big Ten, where everyone's conspiring against everyone else to destroy everyone, the SEC seems to always make sure they get a couple of really highly undefeated or only one loss teams in their title game. So, yeah, Georgia will win this, and I think they'll cover 11. So, two touchdowns,
all right.
I think,
by the end of the game. Best last late game of the Saturday night slate, the complete opposite of Iowa Rutgers. You've got no defense USC versus a little bit of defense Oregon. Ducks favored by 15.5. The number's been going up. Over under now at 75.5. I think started around 73. And if you wait till Saturday morning, that will be getting closer to the 80s. Rob, what do you think here?
Wow. USC's defense has just been so bad this year.
Yeah. Think about that, over 75 points. But if you look at these two teams, you really think they're going to be in the 30s?
Oh, yeah.
I think they're going to be in the 40s.
I think they'll be in the 40s. I would take like a final of like 52 to 47 or something like that, right? Like,
this is one of those games. Yeah. Like, it feels the live USC to cover is going to get to triple digits, right?
Right now, I would take USC to cover and the over.
Yeah, I'd like both of them.
Yeah, I think the over is almost a gimme. I mean, USC, like you said, their defense is terrible, and they've lost a lot of games, but they're scoring in the 40s almost every game. I think even against Utah, they scored 32. I mean, this is going to be a decent number of points. Oregon will win. A pretty big cover. I think they'll win comfortably. I don't know if they'll cover, but yeah, they're definitely going to win the game, and I would certainly take the over. Again, don't wait if you want to take that over, but this is great. Just looking forward to how marvelous it's going to be with these teams in the Big Ten next year compared to the Iowas and Rutgers and everybody else in the world, and that's just going to be glorious.
This isn't going to be a game where if Oregon does come out and have a huge lead, I'm not going to like fall asleep and then wake up at the end for like an overtime where like the team came back from 29 down or whatever. Like, that's not going to happen.
Matt Welch says 21 for Oregon, and Vegas Jair, USC will not score that many in Oregon. So maybe the Oregon defense can hold them down. Yeah. I mean,
score 40, but if they score, you know, 30.
If they can get into the 30s, Oregon will.
Oregon's going to score 40, so I think we're all right. You know, yeah.
I mean, another way, if you like both the USC to keep it tight and you're a little worried that that's too high of a number, same game parlay this, and you can tease it down and probably get, USC to buy 13.5. And get the number closer to 70, probably, or, you know, 71, 72. That could be an approach if you
it's a like smart move, Dave. I like that.
Yeah, a little, you know, betting tips here.
A little something, something.
That's right. That's right. All right. I don't have Nebraska, but Maryland's favored by 1.5 or so, I think. It's been moving down a little bit.
It's a stupid question if you ask me, Dave.
And it's one of those Big Ten games where you have Nebraska, Maryland with an over-under, mid-40s probably. You've got Whiskey Northwestern at 42, Minnesota, and Purdue. Purdue's, I think, actually favored in that game, over-under at 47.5. I think you could take the under in all of those in a parlay and potentially hit a big one, because at this time of year, you're going to get a bunch of unders, I think, in the Big Ten. That's my take. Any thoughts on the Nebraska game? I know we don't bet Nebraska.
The over-under is 43.5 for Nebraska.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've said what I have to, I have said what I have to say. We're not losing another game for the rest of the year, so.
All right, take the money line.
Go big.
I'm going to bet on Nebraska anyway here, so it's at home. So, yeah.
Yep.
I'm irrelevant at this point.
Do you get arrested if you even talk about it?
I think so. So if any feds are listening, note I did not mention a score or anything here.
So. Go get your phone closer to the racetrack out there in Columbus, and you'll be fine. So
that's right. All right, guys, let's get out of here with some.
Hold on. I was going to say I had one game I wanted to bring up.
All right.
The Arizona is quietly having a very good season right now, right? And their recruiting classes are looking great. I really like what they're doing out there. You know, they're not just a basketball school anymore.
Yeah.
They play Colorado this week, and you know, it's an interesting thing because Arizona's already bowl eligible. Colorado needs to win two games to be bowl eligible with three games left, right? Arizona's favored by 10. They're actually ranked, and the over-under is 55.5. I really like Arizona to cover on this one. I think
this is Colorado in Boulder. Is that right, Ron?
It is in Boulder, and that's why I like it even more. I mean, they got Colorado got embarrassed last week in Boulder. And I think that they just, I don't know, man. I think they might be giving up on the season. That's just my thoughts. And I really like Arizona on this one. And it is a 12 o'clock game. So I do like that fact. It's an early day game.
12 o'clock or a 10 o'clock?
12 p.m., 10 o'clock game. I'm sorry, 10 o'clock game. It's an 8 o'clock. Was that an 8 o'clock or? Jesus.
Is it a 10 a.m. Mountain
time? It says 12 p.m. So it's an afternoon game. So.
Okay. I thought that was Eastern time. Typically you wouldn't start a game here at noon.
Maybe you're right. Yeah. Maybe it is Eastern. Although usually it does say Saturday at 12 p.m. And all of these.
We'll chalk it up to daylight savings time. Check.
Yeah, we will. We will, because here's really confused. My phone does Mountain Standard Time. So.
It's an early game. I like it. I avoided this one, Rob. I get it. I've been riding the Arizona wagon this year, actually. I've won multiple bets with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a bad number.
Oregon State game was great. I was in Disneyland and I was out Saturday night, like having a couple drinks, like to end the night by myself, watching that game on TV at a restaurant bar. And it was just, man, I was like, okay, I'm a believer now. Like, that was the game where I was like, this is going to set me on the edge about Arizona, and I'm a believer. Yeah.
No, they play good defense. Quarterback, I can't quite pronounce his name, is quite good. Jed Fish, I thought, was a good hire. It got a lot of criticism, and it's played out quite well. So,
It's Fafita, I think, is how you say
his name. Fafita.
Fafita.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So, all right. All right. Boomer, do you have any games since Rob?
No, I think they were all covered. I think that was a good slate. So most of the games were covered. Really
I get
good.
It.
Yeah. All right, guys. Let's try to get to this parting shots this time. Here we go. All right. Let's start with Rob.
Well, first, I just want to apologize to the Redcast fans out there that have messaged me asking why I haven't been on the show for the last couple of weeks. You know, but life comes at you fast.
So nice.
Well, you know, life comes at you fast if you don't stop and smell the roses once in a while, you know. So, I mean, I went to Disneyland with the family, you know, some career things just going on, just life is there still. And the Huskers have been winning, and I've been enjoying it. And sometimes talking about it when you're enjoying something is just kind of like overkill on my brain, I'm finding, and I'm not used to this feeling. So I just, you know, I'm glad to be back. I'm glad to be here. And
we're glad to have you back, Rob.
You know what, Dave? Yeah. And you know what, Dave, too, other than the games we've attended together this year, we haven't watched a game together. So maybe, like, we'll have to figure out maybe Black Friday or something. If you're, are you going to be in Nebraska?
I'll be here.
Maybe we should figure that out. You know, watch it in the new garage setup, and, you know, go from there.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That's Rob's parting shot. Boomer, what do you have for me?
Well, mostly the texts and tweets I've been getting are asking why am I still on the show, but you need to drink more Kool-Aid. Yeah, exactly. But otherwise, just kind of want to give a shout out. You know, basketball season has tipped off, and you know, both the men's and women's won their opening games, and Nebraska, you know, played again tonight. Again, they covered against Florida A&M. We haven't played the most exciting opponents with Lindenwood and A&M, and, you know, not exciting opponents coming up for a while. But just from what we've seen, that's an exciting looking Nebraska men's team to watch. Dave would probably be the best to ask about it, but, you know, when you think of a Hoiberg team, it's kind of more what I thought they would look like this entire time, and maybe he's finally got that. I know we'll take a deeper dive into that, you know, as the season goes on. It's just crazy we have stuff in November to talk about for football for a change. But, yeah, could be exciting times for basketball. At least it'll be fun anyway to watch. So
it does look promising, and if they can stay healthy and some of these transfers finally really, really hit, I think the culture is going in the right direction. And we'll know soon enough, right? They're going to have some better non-con games here very quick, and then you'll have the early Big Ten games. So we'll know quite early here if we got a different team or not. Well, and it's hopefully building on last year's late run of success. That's for certain. All right, guys. Looking forward to the Nebraska game. It is on Peacock, so I'll have to do a trial run of that, I suppose, like everyone else. And it's the whole deal, I guess. Hopefully we're talking about a victory and start planning our bowl trip next week. So for now, let's call that another Go Big Red cast.
Go Big Red.
Heard at Sports Network Production.